listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
You know, you say that every week, but I don't think you can prove it.
Really?
Yes.
Just take one good look. Look how it's scruffy Monday.
You do.
Today.
You got scruffy. Yeah, you're all like macho.
Yeah.
You know, that's short for mature. Say. You know, it's Spanish for mature.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yes. Thank you. Coming from you, Paul, that's a compliment.
you don't normally go scruffy. I'm Italian. I could grow beards for parties.
No,
so
I don't.
I just, I have a
sensitive skin, Paul.
Do you?
Yeah, it's hard for me to shave too often.
Really?
Yeah.
No, because normally you're very well kept. You know, now you look like the werewolf getting closer to midnight.
Well, yeah. I do my best. we can move off this subject, can't we?
Let's begin by thanking our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services. Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit www.breakdownexpress.com.
And our thanks also go out, Paul, to Performing ArtsLive.com for their ongoing support of our live arts calendar. PerformingArtsLive.com is the most comprehensive such listing service in Southern California, enabling you to search events by date, category, and region.
Now, in the past, here at State of the Arts, we usually have two guests, and we devote the first half of the hour to one and the second half to the other. But our guest today so defies categorization that her artistic overdrive requires at least an hour, but more like a week. Please welcome in studio today, artist, multimediaist, director, collector, party thrower, and songwriter whose various hits have sold over 50 million records, Allie Willis is with us today. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
All right.
How are you?
I am very fine indeed.
Happy to join us, hopefully.
And I'm very happy to be here.
Well, welcome,
and
Allie.
And loving Michael's look.
Thank you.
Add.
He can pull it off, can't he?
Totally.
Well, coming from a fashion icon such as this woman, and I mean that sincerely.
Thank you very
much. I appreciate it. Thank you very much yourself. So, Paul, how was your Mother's Day?
My Mother's Day was fine. I got the usual call from my mother. My mother still has a tendency. I'm going to move this microphone. Hang on one second, because I want to be able to see Allie.
Yes, you need to see me in all my...
There we go. That's
glory.
Better. Now I'm unencumbered.
Okay.
I got my my usual phone call from my mother, which is my mom still leaves messages as though her words are being engraved in stone at the same time. Dear Paul... It's your mother. I got the flowers. I love pro flowers. These tulips, a little wilted. They were a little, but I put them, they got to cut the bottoms off for you. They went to the nursing home to your grandmother. They don't cut the bottoms off. The friggin' things die in a day. But these are okay. They were droopy the first day, but they're fine. You know, but she's send my mother flowers.
Critique.
What's that?
A little critique.
Oh, there's always a little dig.
Yeah.
I could win an Academy Award and I would get a call from her the next day and it would be your tie was a little crooked. Well,
I definitely got that call from my father.
Did
after
you?
Winning a Grammy, like ridiculous. Everyone in the world called me the next day. I got for best soundtrack for Beverly Hills Cop. I had two songs on there. Neutron Dance by the Pointer Sisters and Stir It Up, Patti LaBelle.
Right.
And I get a call from everyone except my father. Finally, I couldn't stand it. 24 hours go by. I call him up. I go, what the? You know, like, how can a parent not congratulate, you know, a kid getting a Grammy? Especially me. I don't, to this day, read, write, or play music. I just hear it all in my head. So it's like a freak of nature to begin with. Anyway, he says to me, like hell you won. I said, what are you talking about? You know, I'm on TV. I got the award. So it ends up, he invited all his friends over. You know, they're all old schleppers. They were in like their 80s or something. And, you know, it was a big award. So they announced it toward the end of the telecast. They all fell asleep. They missed the thing. And therefore, I did not win a Grammy.
Of course.
That's the end of the story.
If it didn't happen in my living room.
Yeah, it didn't happen. Yeah, unbelievable.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Well, Paul's mother is a character, and that impression that he did is really spot on with her. And,
yeah.
But she's a lovely, lovely lady.
She's a lovely lady. Yes, yeah,
she is. She's listening right now.
I've made a lot of money off my mother. I did a one-person show for 9 years off and on, and my mother's character figured prominently in that, and she's wonderful and has a great sense of humor about it. So, hello, Charlotte, if you're listening.
Thank you, Charlotte, if you're listening.
Yes. Now, she, of course, loves Michael. Because Michael's like Omar Sharif, but younger.
Yeah. So she's got a little crush going on.
I think so. How was your mother's day?
Well, my mom is not really available. So I hope it was a lovely day for her, actually. But other than that, I wished other people's mothers.
Yes. Is she where my mother is? Are they... underground?
No, not yet. No, she's above ground. She's just far away. So I went, I kind of pretended like I was my own mother, and I went and did things for myself yesterday, actually.
There you go.
You know?
And I've often heard you referred to as a mother, so...
And that would be with an A-H at the end of that word, probably. But I went to a couple of places I wanted to go, one being a restaurant that I wanted to try, and had a, you know, in between errands and doing this and that, and had a lovely lunch and that kind of stuff. So I wasn't complaining.
And it was a beautiful day. Beautiful day.
Yeah, it was.
The car washed and, you know, watching other people's mothers being honored by their children. Yeah.
Well, there's a Mother's Day special at the car wash?
No. At the restaurant, though, I was watching. Lovely, lovely ladies.
Can I chime in about the restaurant?
Please do.
I have a thought. And, Ali, you are I know you're a computer whiz, among many other things, and we were talking iPad out in the lobby before we came in. But I want to ask you a protocol question about computers, because this happened to me. There's this restaurant in Tarzana, new place, near where my wife and I live. And I just... It's a fairly busy place. They offer this happy hour special. My wife was busy. I said, let me go in and I'll have, because you can get those great happy hour eats inexpensively.
Yes.
They had these Angus slider burgers, little hamburgers, four of them for $9. So I was like, what a deal.
Yeah.
I go in, whole place is full. Guy at the bar with a laptop. Okay, at the bar. We're not in a Starbucks here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With the laptop open, one man commandeered four bar stools.
Sucks.
Four bar stools with the cord coming down off the laptop through the bar stools, leather bags, peripherals, all this stuff.
Yeah, wrong.
And it's just like, what? And best part, did not touch the keyboard the entire time. Bartender puts me in the corner, gives me like a salad plate of acreage to use.
Yeah.
And the guy either had to be an owner or manager or something, but that actually makes it even more offensive to me because he had no awareness of restaurant protocol. Would that have irritated you?
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
Irritated me so much, I went straight to Yelp. Yelp.com.
Yeah, well, see there, that's the ultimate revenge, which is great.
And it is, true. I mean, really, people climb all over that, don't they?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I don't mind if someone is using an iPad or a mobile phone or even a computer if it's within their own space.
Right.
And if they're not participating in a conversation.
Right.
So, I mean, because I'm someone who would have chips installed in my body if I could. So I don't want to put that person down. But the person who yaps on the phone through the meal, get away. And that's ridiculous to hog up that much space.
And not be utilized. And four bar stools in this particular place, that's 30% of the bar seating.
Ridiculous.
And the only place that this special was available was at the bar. It's not like I had a recourse to go to a table because they don't offer that.
Well, the restaurant should have said something, unless it was the owner.
That's just it.
And I'm judging by the way he was treated,
I think that he was either staff or management or something. But anyway,
of all people should have known better.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. It's just a protocol thing. But I see your point. If someone is at an isolated table and they're by themselves and that's it. But the bar is a communal area. I tended bar for years.
Yeah.
That's why I like to do it over waiting tables because it was like my little acre. I was your host.
I love eating at the bar.
Oh, as do I.
Way more than table.
What's that?
Can you turn me up?
Right here in front of everybody?
If you don't mind. You've done it before.
Turn up your headset, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're all the way to
I'm
that
there.
Side.
I'm good there, but no. I need on the board there.
Oh, you need like that?
That's right. Is there that you go. Okay.
You better?
Yes, much better. Thank you.
You try. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
You got a little beard going, so you want a little huskiness.
You
want a little. You want a little Brenda Vaccaro, don't you?
You can't hear him as well.
Yeah, that's just it. Stop rubbing your whiskers against a microphone. Maybe you'd hear yourself talk.
You know, listen. The reason for this, really, Allie, is because I have a very sensitive skin, and when I shave every single day, it just my face is a bloody mess.
Well, although you kind of have a perfect suave look going on when you're freshly shaven.
Yeah.
But I would imagine you would be quite the looker with that grown out even more.
Really?
Yes.
Really? Well, I might have to try
it. That's the advantage the guys have. You can just grow that thing and boom, you are someone else.
Yeah.
And you got that salt and pepper thing going on too.
On the beard.
On the beard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
I would let it go. I'd let it go for a week and see where you're at.
This is,
let it go for a week and hang around behind the Vons and see what happens. Hang out by the dumpster at the Vons, see what happens.
Change,
for you.
Please. More food, please.
I never get any compliments. I colored my hair for years, and when I was doing the show, I used to color my hair, and then I stopped coloring my hair, and it's the first time I ever got any compliments about it. When it started to, just let it go gray, it was like, you know, I'll stick with this
but
for a little while.
But it's like just gray. It's not gray.
Right.
No, it's also nicely distributed, the dark and the light. You see,
well,
so
this
you
is the drawback of being Italian and aging, because you just get, you either go bald or you... If I took this shirt off, you'd think I was wearing an alpaca sweater. So, this is what happens to you.
What did you say once about hair on your back or something?
Oh, yes, yes. When I, you know, putting suntan lotion on my back is like trying to get peanut butter out of a shag carpet.
I need that in my kitsch museum, I think. We need your back.
Speaking of that, introduce Ellie, because I want to talk to her about her kitsch museum, because I checked it out on the website today. It is hysterical. One item especially.
Oh,
but,
I'm dying to
give her
absolutely.
The intro she is due.
For those of you who have just joined us, perhaps, our first guest is truly a one-woman creative think tank, a Grammy, Emmy, Tony, and Webby Award winner and nominee. She has penned such iconic tunes as Earth, Wind, and Fire's September, and Boogie Wonderland, Neutron Dance, recorded by the Pointer Sisters and the Rembrandts, I'll Be There For You, the theme from a little TV show called Friends. Her songwriting credits barely scratch the surface of this creative dynamo. Please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Allie Willis.
Woo!
Yes, I
am.
Hello.
Hello, friends.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine.
So good to have you. I feel like we didn't even need the intro because we hit the ground running.
That's
but
right.
I wanted everyone to know.
That's true.
So the Kitsch Museum, if we could
it's the Allie Willis Museum of Kitsch.
Museum of Kitsch.
AWMOK.com.
Okay.
Get that in.
And we're going to put all of Allie's links her website to on our website, stateoftheartsla.com, but right off, it's Allie Willis. That's two L's, two E's, and two L's again, AllieWillis.com. And there's a ton of stuff there. I was talking to Michael. We go to this little restaurant up the street, Jinky's, to talk before the show. And one of the things I noticed about your website, before we get into your accomplishments, otherwise, just the website itself, I have never seen a website with such a wealth of content that is so easy and fun to navigate. Because you get one or the other. You get totally sparse and you can't find anything, or you get assaultive and you can't find anything.
Yeah.
And I think it's so whimsical, it's so well laid out. It's normally, I don't like the automatic audio.
Yeah.
It was not like that, because it fit so perfectly thematically with what you were doing. And it's a great website. And
so you went to AllieWillis.com.
Yes.
Because there's
right.
actually two websites. One is my personal one.
Okay.
Which is the one that you're talking about.
Right.
See, I got on the web in 1991, so really early.
I saw that you were way early.
developing a social network in 1992. I've addressed Congress on cyberspace. I've lectured at Harvard on it. I didn't actually build my website till 1999, but by that point I had thought about it so much. I just worked with, you know, one other person, and but it is literally tens of thousands of pages deep. But it's I really hate when I go to websites and I cannot figure out what's going on.
Right.
And I am exceedingly into pop culture, and I just wanted it to feel like an entire pop culture experience.
Yeah.
And then the Allie Willis Museum of Kitsch part of it, which is part of the website, is very specifically a social network, but built around the crazy things that people collect and love, yeah, or spot on the street. Really, anything that has to do with pop culture or kitsch, which to me is pop culture gone awry.
Right, right, right.
I feel that way. You know, I'm a big party thrower, and I have always felt strong that the environment is very important. Like, people spend all the money on the catering and the band, but so do all the other people that are throwing parties. You could have a potluck party, but if you're putting it in a place,
right,
that where the environment encourages people to interact with it. And I've always collected 1950s, 1960s, 1970s pop culture artifacts. And inevitably, someone links up to something that they from their childhood or that is just so funny. And then you start having these conversations wouldn't have if you were just sitting in a room next to
them. It's the great homogenizer. It's the great way it brings people together, because it's a shared memory or a shared, you know. And that's also a lost art, though. The art of throwing a party
Absolutely.
Is really a lost art.
Well, and something that Allie's particularly known for, and she also has the ultimate party house.
Oh, yes.
Tell them about the house
that was built as the party house for MGM in 1937. So it's a classic streamlined modern house. It looks like a big pink boat, you know.
When you say it was built as a party house, are you implying what I think you're implying,
yes,
that it was starlets and executives and whole lot of dancing with no steps?
Absolutely. And it feels like a party house. Yeah.
It is magnificent, and it just reeks of everything that that you're interested in. I mean, it's all there.
Yeah, it was incredible. It's not at all a large house. It's just a fabulous house that is kind of a mix of very strong Art Deco, but moving into the 50s. Very, like, you're somewhere between an ocean liner and a spaceship.
Exactly.
Right, right,
exactly.
Right.
Didn't you tell me that what is now the backyard where your pool is located was originally
around.
The front of the house?
Yeah, because the architect's premise was that you put all the money into the front of your house, and then you spend all the time in the back. And most people look at these square boxes with a few little cutout holes in them.
Mm-hmm.
So he, you know, decided that houses should be flipped. So, and it makes all the difference.
Now, are there pictures of your house and the inside of your house on the site, or is that something that you're sort of...
There's pictures of the house scattered throughout the site. There's not a particular...
Not a section.
Home section.
Okay.
Though the New York Times followed me around last week for a few days and are doing a big piece on the house.
Oh, really? Nice.
And then the LA Times, I think a year ago, did like a full page, you know, on it. But
now, you had mentioned that you were just coming back from Detroit. You had a big event take place there with your school,
which I loved.
The whole week. I did a 1 week in Detroit that I filmed as a documentary. But my very specific thing I went back for was that I conducted my high school marching band doing a medley of my greatest hits with the cast of The Color Purple, which I co-wrote, singing along. So it tied together all aspects of my life. And it was the sweetest, most fun. I took it very seriously.
It had to be very emotional,
too,
I would imagine.
It was great. I literally just put a video up today of it online.
Yes, so we saw the... Michael sent me the link today, and we watched it.
Yeah, if you search for Allie Willis Mumford, M-U-M-F-O-R-D, hi. Okay. And the thing that was great, I did it as a benefit to buy the marching band new uniforms. Oh. And they had not been, they had no new uniforms since 1985 when Jerry Bruckheimer, who also went to the high school, bought them new band uniforms so they could perform at the premiere of Beverly Hills Cop. And then I got a Grammy for Beverly Hills Cop. So it's so organic.
Yeah, and synchronistic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But
that's
an absolute ball in the lobby of the theater I grew up in.
Which was the Fox Theater?
The Fox Theater.
It is the Fox. You
gorgeous.
Said that.
Yeah.
I've worked there many times.
Gorgeous theater. Gorgeous.
Beautiful.
So, yeah, it was pretty unbelievable.
I got the biggest kick out of watching you conduct.
Yeah. Of sorts.
Of sorts. Yeah, you put the conductor's hat on at one point.
Yes, and I wanted to wear that so bad, and it was so wobbly. I took it off within one bar.
Yes, I saw that.
I made an executive decision. So it started because I got asked to go back to my college last September to conduct the University of Wisconsin marching band. Doing a medley of my hits at the homecoming show. And I said, yeah, and, you know, it was great. And then someone says, you know, that stadium holds 82,000 people. So I did it in front of 82,000 people, 350-piece marching band.
Oh, my gosh. That must have been something.
I had the time of my life, and I got obsessed with conducting. It was just fantastic. And but I thought, I don't read, so marching band versions are different than the records. Who's going to let me do this? And that's when I went my high school. So now I may have to dig as low as my grade school.
Mrs. Crabtree's
really
first
do,
grade class.
Last year, I'm infamous for not going to see music. It's like, I don't want anyone standing up in front of me. I don't want to hear the person next to me sing. I mean, I'm totally anti the spirit of what it takes to be a good concert thrower. But Earth, Wind, and Fire were at the Hollywood Bowl this last season. And my friends just put their foot down. They just said, this is stupid. You have to go. And I had written like six songs that was in the show. It was just dumb. I didn't go. And when it got to September, the fireworks went off. It was literally the most thrilling musical moment I've had in my whole career. So now my goal is I want to just conduct September at the Hollywood Bowl with Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Wow.
So whenever that happens next, I'm telling you guys right now, I'm coming in.
Well, and a lot of people, I'm one of these people too, that I know songs more by hearing them than by hearing the title. So I want to play a little clip of September so people
please
know
do.
This one of my iconic tune they're talking about. Okay, that's September. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
that
was my very first hit. I co-wrote that with Al McKay, who was the guitar player in Earth, Wind, and Fire,
mm-hmm.
and Maurice White, who I think is the greatest soul singer who ever lived, whose band it was and was the lead singer. And that was written on the very first day we got together.
Oh, that's playing us off the air. But it gets to the end of the show.
Oh,
we're playing.
No, we have something.
Oh, no, we have another
very
thing.
Very beautiful.
Okay, we'll have something else for
very
playing
hot,
us off the air.
Pistol hot.
Let's take a little break, though, and do our arts calendar, Michael. Should we do that now?
Indeed, yeah,
I can
sure.
kick it off, and then we get back to Ali shortly thereafter. But I will start. The Hollywood Fringe Festival is an annual celebration of the emerging arts. Environments for the Fringe include both traditional and unorthodox venues, fully equipped theaters, street corners, clubs, bars, and places unexpected. Performances are self-produced by local, national, and international arts companies and independent performers. In the spirit of most fringes, participation is open and uncensored. Gotta love the uncensored. Hollywood is home to dozens of Los Angeles premier theaters and clubs, making it the perfect spot for the festival. The neighborhood has always been a source of unapologetic opinion, underground mentality, and a deep passion for the cutting edge. The Hollywood Fringe is an immersive festival worthy of the neighborhood's reputation and takes place June 16th through 26th. Check out HollywoodFringe.com for more information.
And a world premiere, a world premiere by Tom Jacobson, The Chinese Massacre, annotated, directed by Jeff Liu, I hope I'm saying that right, is presented by LA's acclaimed Circle X Theater. 1871, Los Angeles was a violent, vicious town. Suspected criminals were often hanged by vigilante groups, and lawlessness had reached its peak. The Chinese Massacre, annotated, tells the story of the first race riot in Los Angeles and the dangerous Wild West town that became the metropolis we know today. It plays through May 28th at Atwater Village Theater. Check out CircleXTheater.org for more information.
And, Michael, a guest that we had on the show, Warren Davis, is actually in that production.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's how I found out about it. For more information about events in our arts calendar, you can visit either StateOfTheArtsLA.com or PerformingArtsLive.com, where you can also check out what's happening in Southern California every day of the week. Now, Michael.
Absolutely.
Before we get back to LA, you were out and about this week, and you were at a couple of shows, weren't you?
I was. I had the honor to see one amazing lady stopping in at the all-new Valley Performing Arts Center, Ali, which is in Northridge at Cal State.
Have you seen that venue, Ali?
No.
It is amazing.
Spectacular.
No. $125 million facility up in Northridge, the college. And I saw, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Michael, but I saw Loudon Wainwright and Sean Colvin there. They kicked off the whole thing. And we love that venue.
Last Friday evening, the pleasure of seeing Shirley MacLaine. And she was not in concert. She
was there. So all different kinds of stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. She was there telling about her life through motion pictures and amusing anecdotes and stories that we had all wanted so much to hear. And also doing it with slides and then also adding in film clips into the hour and a half, hour 90.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. And what was so magical about it was that it was like sitting in her living room with her and like she was talking to you, just you.
Yeah.
And there were 1,700 people there, totally captivated. You could have heard a pin drop hanging on to her every word. And Shirley goes out and does this. I don't know if she does it every weekend, but she usually does it sporadically and takes this show out, which is just simply that. It's an evening with Shirley MacLaine. And she does get into all of the other things that she believes in, which she's very passionate about the fact that of afterlife and terrestrial life and so forth, which I am totally down with that. I listen to all of that and pay attention to it, and I had a smile I think on my face from ear to ear for 2 hours.
Does she do a Q&A?
Yes, that follows.
Okay.
That follows.
Because that's always my favorite part of events like that, where you get the interaction.
Yeah, she had quite a few people lined up the aisles to ask questions. And you know what? She answered every single person's question.
Really?
Yes,
that's
indeed.
Great.
And not with just a short answer to move on with the evening. If it was a long answer that she felt compelled to give to that question, she did.
And you had said, Michael, because working in PR as long as you have, you hear certain things about certain people, and apparently the word on the street is that she's just the most charming, pleasant person.
Absolutely. I mean, I had met her.
Did you get that sense from seeing her?
Most definitely. And I had the pleasure of meeting her earlier on in her career when she was singing and dancing, especially in doing Vegas, and I was representing David Brenner, who used to open for her all the time.
Oh. On a favorite.
Yeah, and she was a little different then. You know, she was younger and priorities were different in her life. But, she lives very comfortably and very very much a loner in New Mexico now. So she's out there amongst the stars. Yeah, she doesn't do the Hollywood thing anymore. She comes in for, certain things and this kind of a thing being one of them. And if any of you have the opportunity to go out to our all new beautiful Valley Performing Arts Center, as Paul said, $125 million state of the arts venue, which is to die for. You definitely must go see them on the campus of Cal State Northridge. Very easy to find, valleyperformingartscenter.org. Check out their upcoming events, which also include this month an evening with Patti LuPone and Mandy Patinkin. And coming up after that, an acoustic evening with Lyle Lovett and John Hyatt.
Oh, really?
Yes. Oh, see. Absolutely.
So I love it because I live in Tarzana, so I get on Reseda, I go north, I get my Greek food, and then I just go to eat. I love that place. So you saw Shirley MacLaine, and you saw another production.
I did. I saw something I was telling Ali about very, very briefly, which I think you'd be fascinated with, actually. It's called The Next Fairy Tale, books, words, and music all written by the same young man. He's an actor, a writer, and a composer who not only earned his B.A. in theater at UCLA, but graduated with the Martin Sosin Peter Matz Musical Theater Writing Award, the UCLA Musical Theater Writing Award, given for musicals with premiere at UCLA, and was first runner-up in the Tim Robbins Playwriting Competition and the Academy for New Musical Theater's Search for New Musical. His name is Brian Pugach, and he is all of 23 years old.
Oh.
Each of these awards were as a result of the new musical The Next Fairy Tale, which is currently on stage at Hollywood's legendary Celebration Theater. And it is basically what this is. It's a kind of combobulated fairy tale, if you will, which in this time of political unrest about human rights and same-sex marriage shines a new and brilliant light on today's real-life climate, tolerance and acceptance or not. And unfolding at the beginning of a new decade, a quartet of fairy godmothers under the leadership of their god mistress, who is a character by the name of Minerva. She skillfully is played, by the way, by Gina Torsila. I hope I'm saying that right. To create a new fairy tale that a magic mirror, played by Charles Cedric Hall, announces what will become the next fairy tale to join the world's most beloved standards, such as Little Red Riding Hood, The Wizard of Oz, etc. Furthermore, the hero of this new tale is to be a prince, Prince Copernicus, splendidly, if not perfectly, created by Christopher Mikisch, who believes that life and true personal success isn't at all about fighting, rather a simple suit of armor made of smiles and plenty of hugs is what will do it for him. And when the homophobic Minerva learns that Copernicus's true love is another prince, Prince Helio, who comes to life through the wide-eyed, lovable Patrick Gomez, she's hell-bent on disengaging the relationship to save the youth of the world from a homosexual love story. That is the nuts and bolts of it. The performances that are in this play are really stellar. I mean, it's done very tongue-in-cheek. It is a new work, and I do honestly think that it's probably in a stage where it needs to continue to be worked
in a workshop
as it's unfolding.
Yeah.
Well, it's workshopped. It's in its first equity waiver production at this point. But this young man, Brian Pugach, has such an amazing career ahead of him. And actually, I had hoped he would join us today because of you. Mm-hmm. And I had talked to him about the fact that you were on the show today, and he was very enamored because he knew exactly who you were.
Oh, I like him already.
Exactly. But the show has, it's something that people should go see right now before it gets into a larger theater, which it will. It's only a matter of time.
I'm curious about something, though, in how you described it. Is it something that could play? Because I think in a subject matter like that, it's important that young people see content like that and see those stories, especially with all that we hear with the bullying that's going on, you know, across the country. Do you think it's something that could play to a younger audience, or is it not suited for that? I mean, is that who it's geared toward?
No, not necessarily. But I think that to a younger audience that's been schooled properly and been brought up properly by their parents, but I think that then you're getting into really having to pick and choose on that front. Right. I think that more importantly, quite frankly, it is the older audience that needs to be seeing, the adults, the straight men and women that need to see something like this, because as I said, this puts a new spin on tolerance and acceptance.
Oh.
And that's really what needs to be understood here. And it's done so in such a way, in such a lyrical kind of way, in this fairy tale kind of mode. And believe me, it's really like a fairy tale. If you saw Into the Woods, this is very similar
okay.
in its take on that. And that's what's important here. And it does send a great message. It has a lovely score, by the way, of two outstanding songs, one of them being, in fact, I'm going to say it properly. It's, give me a moment here. It is sung by a couple of different characters in the show, but this is, by the way, the Michael Shepard, I do want to acknowledge him as having directed the show. He is the artistic director of the Celebration Theater. And in Act One, there are several songs. The one that I'm referring to, however, is The Cinderella Story. That is a beautiful, beautiful song that Rachel Genevieve sings in this story. She's also one of the fairy mothers,
okay,
the fairy godmothers.
Okay.
Sorry, I get a little off when I started. So many things to think about.
No, but when you have a lot of good things to say about a production.
So I urge people to go see this, and it's again playing at the Celebration Theater. It has just been extended one more time through May 21st.
Oh, extended twice, huh?
Yes, and to get tickets for this, you should simply call 323-957-1884 or visit the Celebration Theater website at Celebration Theater. That's with an R-E, Celebration Theater, R-E, .com.
Now, so speaking of musical pieces and
yes,
being involved in musical pieces from their earliest incarnations. You like that segue? You like the way I
yes,
did that?
Yes, very
you like
smooth.
Subtle like a freight train,
very
I'm telling you.
Very smooth.
Color Purple.
Yeah.
Color Purple.
Yes.
So,
wow.
Michael was telling me that about the show. I'm sorry to say that I haven't seen The Color Purple, but I'm always fascinated to talk to the creators of things like this. Michael and I both are. And to hear about what the journey that it took, things that you, a great friend of mine, Jeff Ayers, is one of the great comic writers. He always says, one of the things about writing is that you have to be willing to give up your favorite thing.
Oh, my God. And in a musical situation,
yeah,
constantly.
Yeah. And I'm always curious to hear about what the journey was like for a creator.
Well, I was brought on, not even brought on originally. Scott Sanders, who is the producer who bought the rights to do the show, called me up in 1998 and said, I bought the rights to do The Color Purple. At this point, most of the 90s for me, I had spent doing technology-based things. I was trying to invent a social network. I was trying to define the internet. I was, doing all this stuff. But I really missed songwriting. I was working with a lot of people who called themselves artists, but they were engineers who built code. And I missed the soul of songwriting, because actually that the Friends theme, I wrote that song just to get out of a publishing deal. I did not want to write linear songs anymore. I really believed in nonlinear forms and interactivity and blah, blah, blah. But here we are, 1998, 4 years later, just really missed being around music and artists,
okay,
and everything. So I thought, well, he's going to ask me to write The Color Purple. I'm a logical choice. If you look through my work, it seems perfect, even though I really did not go to musicals. Can't say it's my favorite form of entertainment. But instead, he gave me the name of two songwriters, and he said, choose which one is the best. And, I was dying because I really wanted it to be me. And I really felt that neither of these choices were especially appropriate. But I gave him my opinion, and then basically I was kind of an informal consultant on the whole project.
Okay.
1 year later, calls me up and said, you were right. This didn't really work out. So I think, well, now he's going to ask me. And this time he gave me the name of 50 songwriters. And he just said, say yes or no. I'm going to have people compete. And I could not believe it. I was nowhere on the list. But he gets all the way to the end, and he says the name Brenda Russell. And Brenda is a brilliant songwriter. And she actually was on her way over to my house at that time, because I had co-created an animated series that was on Oxygen, when Oxygen first launched. And Brenda and Stephen Bray, another great songwriter,
absolutely,
were both on their way to my house. Stephen's known mainly for Madonna records and the whole kind of respect yourself, get into the groove period. Brenda wrote songs like Luther Vandross, If Only for One Night. She wrote that Aaliyah Adams song, Get Here. She, both great. So I said, well, what if we competed as a team? And Scott says to me, well, yes, but no special favors. And it's like, you haven't thought of me for 2 years. I'm not expecting a favor. So the only advantage we had is that I picked who we competed against. But I did pick, you know, really who I thought. Anyway, we got the gig, and that was in 2001 at that point. And, you know, we wrote over 60 songs to get down to the final 23.
No, let me interrupt you for 1 second. When you said you got the gig, now that the decision-making process of who gets it, is it as simple as sample songs? Is it
as simple? That you wrote songs to audition with. You were supposed to pick a scene either from the movie or from the book, or kind of make up your own scene from that and write to that. And we wanted to pick the most complex scene we could think of that involved a lot of characters, because we figured most of these people who were competing, pop songwriters, they were going to pick a song, say, that Shug Avery sang in the juke joint, just that was a performance song.
Right.
And we really wanted to show that we could write for characters.
Right.
And there was a different book writer at the time. So a lot of the first couple years that we were writing this, we were just flying blind, you know. And it wasn't that someone would write the book and then you'd fill in with the songs. Everyone was writing everything together. In 2002, Marsha Norman was brought in. I absolutely loved working with her. She had gotten a Pulitzer Prize the same year that Alice Walker got a Pulitzer Prize for The Color Purple. She got one for Night Mother. So just being able to work with two Pulitzer Prize winning authors, I learned more about character, more about story. For me, the experience was so much bigger than just getting to write a Broadway show. I think it helped me in almost everything I did. Wow. But when they say to you, do not get attached to anything, it so has nothing to do with how great the song is. Sure. It has to do with how it serves the scene, how it serves the character.
Right. Does it further the story?
Yeah. And ultimately, the closer you get to opening, especially once you go to Broadway, it has as much to do if the wig guy has enough time to change all the hair, if the, you know, it's just, it's a collaboration involving hundreds of people.
It's a collaboration involving hundreds of people. It's also a collaboration involving thousands of people when you consider the preview audiences.
Oh, absolutely.
And where they, how they react to certain things. And if you really sense sort of like, okay, there's a lull here that we didn't know in rehearsal because we enjoy this song so much, but maybe it's not really being embraced by people.
Yeah, and you change throughout, constantly throughout previews.
The Color Purple previews in Atlanta? Is that where they took place?
Well, yeah, the regional thing. The region, we almost rewrote the entire show after Atlanta. Right. And then on Broadway, the night that the critics came, our lead actress had 105 fever. So we didn't even know if she was going to be able to open the show, but the critics saw an understudy. So, and all that stuff, it just becomes, it is trauma after trauma after trauma. And I just tried to look at it like this is like one of the greatest adventures I've ever been on in my life. It was a joy to be able to have anything to do with The Color Purple. We constantly heard, you know, people don't talk to each other after they write a Broadway show together. It's such an intense experience. And we all remained like just a great family. And I love all the tour casts. That took me time. Originally, I only wanted to see the lead actress do it. I don't want any understudy. I don't want any new cast. But then I realized this is a living, breathing thing, and I'm completely fascinated still to see casts do it. I mean, I saw it as recently as 2 weeks ago. It was incredible.
Well, the biggest testament to how much you enjoyed it, has it changed your view of the musical?
Well, that's a multi-level answer. I did not... Scott Sanders is like going to polish his gun right now as I say this. I cannot say that this was a community that welcomed us, and having Oprah Winfrey in there, I think, made it even harder. They viewed us as a bunch of like outsiders. I didn't find the community as interesting as I find the television, film, records, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
I certainly learned how to appreciate a musical, and I really never knew how to watch a musical before. I do find the form of it fascinating. But for me to do something again that took up 5 years of my life, I would first of all want to go in and do more than music because I really am a multimedia artist. So that part of it got a little frustrating the deeper we got into it because
you
I'm not
felt a little confined. Once
yeah, and it also it's a director's medium, and I love the director, but it's I'm not the type to not to only have an opinion about music because music to me is linked to everything visual, and so that was a little hard. But I certainly appreciate musicals more than I did. Do I actively go see them? No. But
Do people ask you to go see them with you?
Yes.
With them and you decline?
Assuming I love them.
Uh-huh, okay.
But I find many of them, I don't understand why they're breaking into song a lot of times. I don't understand why the song is repeating what I just spent 20 minutes watching.
This is exactly Monica's point of view about musicals. She said there are certain ones that will take her away.
Yeah.
There are certain ones that, and the one that comes to mind that we both just really dig is Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which is really more of a rock opera than a musical. But it is. She can't suspend the disbelief of, why are they singing? They're in a restaurant. can't really make that jump. But, I love musicals, and, I know Michael.
Yes,
one
indeed.
Of your favorites.
Well, I had the privilege, Paul,
that's
as
how
I
we
said
met,
to you earlier.
Right?
Yes. Of,
yeah.
We met through Maxine.
Yeah.
And then I.
But it was right after Color Purple.
It was right when you were writing it.
Was it even before?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. I came over to the house and listened to new passages of your music.
That's right.
And during the time that I was coming over, and you were so kind to let me sit in your studio and listen to these songs, Alice Walker came.
Yeah.
And.
That
also heard the music for the first time there,
that
right?
That was thrilling.
So that's got to be.
Yeah.
But what if somebody was to ask you to write a rock and roll musical?
If it was a subject I was really interested in and I could do it a little more broadly than I did, perhaps. But I think ultimately it would probably have to be something that was my own idea to sustain me as much. But with that said, incredibly collaborative medium. So you're not sitting there and only working by yourself writing a musical.
Right.
But I don't, I felt that same way about songwriting. People used to think of me as a lyricist. I think because I couldn't sit down and play you anything I wrote. And I felt the same way about that. I write music and lyrics. So if I'm just coming into something for lyrics or I'm just coming into songwriting, into a musical, for the music end of it, especially if the book's been written already. Because in Color Purple, we all wrote everything. We all conceived of the structure together. That each day started with everyone discussing story and character. And then you kind of go off, but you're constantly coming back together.
Right.
It's not that there's a story that says insert song here.
Right.
So if I could just do things in a broader context that took more advantage of the kind of artist I am, I might be interested.
Fascinating, as always, Allie Willis, ladies and gentlemen. And we're not quite through with Allie, are we, Paul?
Well, no, we're not. We're not. I just want to say before we go into that, I just want to say how happy I am, Allie, that we had you for the full hour, because you really would never have been able to touch on even...
I appreciate that.
Minuscule part of all that you've done in the allotted time. We could actually have her back next week and we would still fill the hour.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that we like to do at the end of our hour is to share the most unusual, interesting. We only have like 3 minutes to do it, but can you give us one of the, in your own personal career history, the most unusual thing to happen to you or one of the more unusual things?
Yeah, well, I've had a lot of them, but I probably would say that in 1985, I was named one of the most dangerous subversives living in the United States by the communist government. They're, the official newspaper was Pravda, and they singled me out with Prince as being the two most dangerous people in rock and roll. And for my song Neutron Dance, that they mistranslated as Neutron Bomb, and I had just done a People magazine interview, and I kind of paraphrased the song, And it was, you know, I know what I said in the article was like, you know, well, the whole world could go up in smoke tomorrow. Someone just kind of has to push the button.
Right.
So it's up to you if you have like the wrong job or the wrong relationship or whatever, just make a change basically and dance. And that to me was what the Neutron Dance was.
Right.
And they took my first verse, which was, I don't want to stay here anymore. I'll just stay here locked behind the door. Just no time to stop and get away because I work so hard to make it every day. They translated that into a powerful nuclear explosion is approaching. It will annihilate everyone. So who cares if you have no money, no car, no love, just dance. And they said that I poisoned the minds of youth, preaching the inevitability of nuclear war, and Prince got it for Purple Rain, which they said was nuclear fallout.
Oh, it was radioactive, yeah. Nuclear.
So I would have to say at once that was the strangest and most wonderful thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah. It's one of the most distinguished things.
It was fantastic.
Wow. Ali, thank you so much. We want to play a little bit of a song from The Color Purple. This is Push the Button, is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
And we'll let this play us off the air and I push the button.
Oh, yes, it is, actually.
And thank you so much. It was a true pleasure talking to
you, Ali.
Thank you. Thank
Michael,
you
I'm so grateful you introduced me to these people.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. We will see you all next week.